Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report. I'm going to start out with something today in the first half of the report. I'm going to give you some segments from my friend Dr. Chuck, and what we're going to talk about is a program that he has entitled Surviving Sickness and Suffering. I use this program. It takes about 15 days to get through it, and I have to tell you, in today's society, everybody should pick up a copy of this particular program because it, W-O-R-K-S, works. Let's get into it. Charles, what do you want to talk about?
Well, thanks. I thought I'd start out with a story. So have you ever been to Paris, Al?
Yes, I have.
You have? Well, so I knew a guy from Paris once. He lived in a little chateau on the outskirts of Paris.
Right.
Paris, Texas, not Paris. So anyway, his name was Horace, and Horace was quite a character. I had worked on Horace several times, and, you know, I kind of always kind of squinged when I saw him walk through the lobby because he was an old cowboy, and he'd leave manure. He had manure on his boots and mud on his boots, and he'd just leave a trail of manure and mud in the lobby for us to clean up. And so, but anyway, Horace was a real good guy. He was the real deal. You know, in Texas, we say, we describe pretenders, and we say that they're all hat and no cattle. Well,
right.
Horace was just the reverse. He was the real deal. He was an old cowboy, and so I'd passed him up several times. And he came back after surgery, and he was dressed to the hilt. I was kind of surprised. I really didn't recognize him because he was dressed in a big old, you know, silver belt buckle and a, you know, one of those button down, you know, snap button shirts, and he
right.
looked really snazzy. And I said, "Well, Horace, what happened today? You usually come in an old dirty pair of overalls." He says, "Well, Doc, I just wanted to dress up for you." And the one thing that Horace was carrying that was really interesting is he had this hat on top of his head, and it was a Stetson, but it was one of those old, worn-out Stetsons. You know, it wasn't what we call a town hat. You know, I mean, it's one of those hats that had been, it was classy, but it had been weathered. He had taken a belt and put it around it, and it really was kind of an expression of who he was. So I asked him, I said, "Horace, where'd you get that hat?" And he says, "Well, this old hat, I won this hat in a rodeo up in Decatur. It was my aider from Decatur. I got this belt buckle and this hat." And he said, "You know, everybody asked me about this hat. I had a guy today at Walmart that offered me $100 for this thing." And I said, "Well, that's great." You know, and Horace took the hat off his head, and he kind of held it in his hands for a second and looked out the window. I could tell that he was, you know, kind of considering something. And he said, "You want to try it on?" I said, "Well, sure, Horace." So I took his hat and put it on my head. It fit perfectly. You know, and Horace kind of looked at me, and a kind of a tear filled his eye, and he said, you know, Doc, I'm going to give you that hat." And I kind of stopped and paused and realized what Horace was doing. You know, Horace gave me the hat on the top of his head, as we say in Texas, you know, and man, it was just quite a gift. And I'll tell you, that's a treasured gift that I, I cherish more than any award or accomplishment or anything I've ever had is that hat that Horace gave me. You know, but what I kind of realized is I kept the hat in the office, and as people came in, I'd let them wear the hat, and everybody just got a kick out of it, you know. These little old 80-year-old ladies with, you know, with purple hair would wear the hat, and, you know, little kids and stuff, and, you know, people who were discouraged and stuff, and I gave them that hat on and let them wear it, you know. And the more I began to think about that, and the more I thought about how Horace was just passing it on. Horace gave because Horace loved. And
right.
It was an expression of who he was, Al. And I think so often in our lives, when we give of expressions of who we are to other people, we receive so much more. And I just want to encourage, you know, our listeners that there's so much that we can give of ourselves. It may not be a hat. It may be a life experience, or just a word of encouragement, or maybe just, you know, laughing with somebody, or crying with somebody, or just a little act of kindness. There's always something, you know. And I think in a sense, Al, that's God's kind of way of, you know, it says that, you know, John 3:16, that God gave because God loved, you know, and so in a sense, that's expressing God's love to other people, maybe in a small way, doesn't have to be necessarily, you know, sharing something spiritually with them, but maybe just in a small way expressing, you know, God's love to us. And that's what Horace did to me that day, and I kind of realized that, you know, when I returned the favor and I passed it on, I felt a lot better.
Yep.
So I just want to encourage folks to think about that. You know, there's a statement by John Wesley. He said, do all the good you can by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, to all the people you can, as long as you can. And I think that's a great thing to think about, especially right now. You know, we've got so many crazy things going on, and I'll tell you, Al, people are just discouraged.
Yep. Boy, I can relate to that, Chuck. You know, I can really relate to that. A person who means an awful lot to me is very angry at me right now, and very angry at me because I supported Trump. I mean, I think that's kind of silly, but I mean, it's just, you know, you have to support all people, even if you disagree with them. And I'm certainly not supporting this guy at all by just getting angry and getting defensive, for lack of better terms. It sounds to me like I should take a lesson from Horace.
Well, I think we all can, Al.
Yeah,
that's the
we
thing.
All
None
can.
Of us get
know,
it right.
I know, right.
You know, I'll tell you, I have messed up so many times in my life. I heard someone say, you know, people don't really care what you know. They care about how you make them feel, you know. And so,
yeah.
And so sometimes we think about the big things, and so often it's the small things that make a difference, the
yep.
small expressions that we give to folks. And, you know, I've got those relational tensions with my family right now. I've got a son who we're going through some differences of opinion about, you know, where to go. How do you tell a 20-year-old kid what to do?
You don't. Let me tell you, you do
Baby,
not.
Baby, you
tell
can help me with that one, Al.
You don't do it, man. I went through that. I went through that with four daughters. You cannot do it.
Right. I mean, the best you can do is make them think it's their idea. So, but I'm learning to pick my battles, and I'm learning, you know, to love. And, you know, sometimes it's just in the small things. And so that's what I want to encourage people, because, you know, we do. We have family members who may have a different worldview than we do, different beliefs than we do. But we can always go back to the point, you know, God gave because God loved.
Right.
And, you know, and when we love people, just like, you know, for us, I mean, you know, for those of us who, you know, are Christians, or, you know, God gave to us and demonstrated his love to us even when we were, you know, we didn't care, you know. And so we have to have that kind of mindset that we're going to love people unconditionally. It's hard. I don't get it right. But it is possible.
It is possible. What I want to chat about, we got about a minute left here, at the very most, actually much less than that, maybe about 40 seconds. I want to talk in the second segment about your program entitled Surviving Sickness and Suffering, How to Survive and Thrive in Your Health Challenges. You know, Chuck, health challenges can be not only physical, but some of the toughest health challenges
yep.
are mental. Chuck,
yep.
we got to take a real quick commercial break here. Hang on, my friend, going to be right back. And hang on, my
Great.
Friends out there. Right back after the commercial break.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, back here with Dr. Chuck. I want to talk about your program, Doc. The program is entitled Surviving Sickness and Suffering. It's about a 15-week program, now that I'm looking at the table of contents. How does it work, Bud?
Well, so Al, this is a journal. So one of the things I've realized, even as I was as I began writing books, is that when I journal things down, and it helps me to process those life events that I'm going through, and helps me as I begin to kind of write down things.
Right.
It helps me to express my emotions and really think about my values and think about my priorities. So this is a journal, and it really is a faith journal in a sense. It goes through one Bible passage, just kind of helping people to stay focused. You know, if you show me your focus, I'll show you your future. And so often when we're going through a health crisis, we just lose focus, or whatever kind of circumstance we're going through. You know, we're going through a relational problem. We're going through COVID. We got sick family members. We're going through all of these, you know, these changes in our country. So we got to stay focused. And so often distraction brings doubt. And
yep.
So I just kind of go through that story in the Bible. It's a very familiar story about the disciples and the boat and the storm. And, you know, they're in the middle of the boat in the middle of the night, and they think they're fixing to die. And here comes Jesus walking on the water, and it
yep.
scares the heck out of them. So,
yeah.
And so it just kind of talks more about our focus and focusing us in on spiritual things and focusing in on that connection. You know, because I really think spiritually one of the things that we need to do is to live not under our circumstances, but live above our circumstances. And, you know, that story, you know, Jesus was out in the water, and, you know, and Peter asked Jesus if he could come out on the water. And for a moment, you know, Peter walked on the water. It was an amazing thing that happened. And, of course, everyone focuses on the fact that Peter sank, but there for a moment, Peter lived above his circumstances. There's a possibility that we can live above our circumstances,
yep.
no matter what they are. So that's what this does. It kind of takes you through the process of a faith journey and understanding, you know, how to stay focused in the midst of some crazy circumstances. In this particular case, it's more about health. And, you know, of course, there's so many people that are going through all kinds of COVID things, not just the people themselves, but caregivers
yeah.
who are taking care of these COVID patients. So it's just helping people to keep focused.
Well, you know, you have to keep focused. One thing I have learned is you have to, you know, at the age of 77, you do learn a few things out of life. But the one thing that
yep.
I've learned is you have to appreciate everybody's opinion. That's
yep.
very, very important. But, you know,
yep.
the only thing I would ask in return for that is I would hope that people would at least listen to what I have to say. I mean, you know, they may think I'm a doom cough. They may, you didn't know I was bilingual, did you? Anyway, they can think whatever they want. That's fine with me. But one thing I've learned is you have to listen to everything that people have to say. And one of the reasons, Dr. Chuck, that this radio program is so successful is because our philosophy, every one of our philosophies, and when I say every one, I mean the folks on the blog, my guests who are all friends of mine, et cetera,
yep.
et cetera, you have to realize that a nursery in a hospital is a very big room, and it's a real mistake to think that you are the prettiest baby in the nursery. You know,
yep.
A lot of secular self-help books have been written over the years, and I've probably read all of them. That's probably part of the reason for any success that I've had in the world. You know, Dale Carnegie, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the ones that I have gravitated to and that I think are really good are the ones that are written with a spiritual basis. Norman Vincent Peale, I'll tell you.
Right.
I contributed more money to the Plymouth Congregational Church, which was his church in New York, and I've never been there. But I contributed
right.
to that church when Kath and I had, you know, didn't have a whole lot of money, because I knew he was doing something really good for society. You know,
right.
you have to listen to other people.
Right.
And if you don't, I feel sorry for you.
Right. Well, irregardless of your worldview, you know, you have to examine your life. And that's, you've been going back way before even Christianity. Socrates says the unexamined life is not worth living. And
right.
So, you know, we all kind of have to take a step back and examine things. You know, there's some very specific reasons why I'm a Christian, you know, and why, you know, there's that book that says I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. You know, looking at, well, you know what I'm saying? I mean, looking at cosmology and,
right.
and you know, the uncaused cause and all the, you know, all the laws and all the things that can't be explained,
right.
even a moral law, you know, so, but even taking all those things, you know, and then taking the next step of why I believe in Christianity versus something else. But yeah, I mean, everybody is entitled to their opinion. I would just encourage people to, like Socrates says, stop and examine your life and examine those things. What really bothers me, Al, especially nowadays, is we have these people with all these notions, you know, that you know, they're irreconcilable. They can't really be reconciled. I mean, they believe things that if you really kind of follow into the endpoint, it doesn't make sense. It's absurd. And
right.
and that's why I really want to encourage people to examine not only what they believe, but why they believe it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there are very many different philosophies within what I would call the non-secular world. And I
yep.
will tell you, one thing I learned in a long, long time ago is I'm not the prettiest baby in the nursery. And there are a lot of people who are a lot smarter than I am who may
yep.
have different faiths than I do. But I'll tell you, they may have different faiths, but I have to say they don't have a stronger faith in their particular belief than I have in mine. And I'm just so happy that that is there. That gives me the feeling that I'm walking on a tightrope, which is what life really is.
Yep.
Chuck, I'm walking on this tightrope, but I got a net below me.
Well, I'll tell you something. What's interesting is that everyone expresses faith.
Yep.
You know, in some form or fashion, it's just the question of, you know, what is that faith on a credible source?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would encourage people, you know, to really think about and examine. You know, especially nowadays, because, you know, we hear these little sound bites from the media,
yep.
and we really don't really stop and process what people are saying.
No, we don't. But let me say this in closing, because we're down to 15 seconds. We can talk about this anytime. Chuck, you are now a regular on the show.
Thanks.
But I think that, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And the conclusion that I have come to is anybody is a good person who believes in some type of higher power. Thanks, Chuck.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on to the second half of KER Politics. Take a listen, by the way, to what Dr. Chuck has to say. He really makes some very, very good points, and he's helped an awful lot of people. Jim McKinney is on the line with me right now. He's helped an awful lot of people also, but I have to say, one thing, he hasn't really helped very many of you liberals, but then, of course, you're not listening to this show. Jimmy, let's do a highlight of what President Biden has done this week. The first thing that I would bring up is he was called out by the Archbishop of, I believe it was, I can't remember now, but called out by him as to what he should have said. He should have said, instead of calling him a devout Catholic, the Archbishop said, I am a Catholic, but I do not believe the teachings of the Catholic Church, and I run my life the way I think I should be running it, or something like that. I posted that article, by the way, on the on the website. It's very, very interesting. He has done that. And then the other thing that came out this week that I thought was interesting is the president of France called for the president, and Kamala Harris ended up taking the call, which I thought was really, really kind of interesting. Any comments, Bud?
Yeah, I think it's funny this week. Biden, the puppet, I'm sorry, President Puppet or Joe Biden, I'm not sure which. He's had a pretty interesting week. He starts off with this CNN town hall meeting the other night, and he actually says a number of things that even CNN called him out on. He talked about minimum wage and the impact of minimum wage. CNN said that's a false statement. He made comments on immigrant population, a number of different things. He had some blunders, but these are actual, you know, falsehoods that CNN called out.
Right.
And he really looked bad on the show. Then the other thing that he's done this week is, you know, we were attacked. The U.S. base was attacked in Erbil, Iraq, northern Iraq, Kurdish areas, by Iranian Shiite-sponsored terrorists. And
that was earlier this week, yeah.
It was. And so what happens, one contractor that's, you know, supports U.S., a number of other contractors, as well as a soldier, are wounded. One's killed. A number of others are wounded. And what does Biden do? He says, hey, we'll go back into negotiations with Iran on the JCPOA, on the Joint Comprehensive Peace Agreement on uranium enrichment with Iran, the Iran nuke deal, the 2015 deal that was really a disaster. And, you know, these, you add these different policy issues up and the continuation of executive orders that are really going against a large percentage of the population with immigration, all these different issues, gun control. And I think, you know, it's starting to show that he doesn't really know what he's doing up there.
No. Well, I think the gun control thing is really interesting. I can't see that one ever passing. I really can't. I would be amazed if it did. To hold the seller of a firearm, be it a handgun or a rifle, responsible for any crime that's committed for it, I mean, that doesn't even make sense. That's not even legal. I mean, that's, you know, then what are you going to do, you know, when some kid gets a, buys a 38 special from, you know, some source, you know, other than a dealer. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do?
you're going to
sue the city?
Somebody runs somebody over in the street, so you're going to sue the car maker for it? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
They should. I mean, because Ford Motor Company has a lot of money. And, you know, the automobile industry in the United States really is in good shape right now.
Well, you know, with these policies, the immigration policies, he has a pathway to citizenship for possibly up to 20 million illegal immigrants in the United States. It just doesn't make a lot of sense when so many Americans are out of work, when he, you know, he did not campaign on any type of issue like that. You know, people didn't vote for that. They didn't vote for open borders. They didn't really understand what they were getting.
Well, unemployment is up substantially in the latest numbers, which I think is really kind of, it's really kind of funny, you know.
It's funny, but it's sad because there are real impacts with these types of policies. And people, you know, I mean, a lot of people are going to wake up and say, what the heck if I did vote for him? And, you know, that's questionable right now how many votes are actually out there. They're going to say, what the heck was this guy doing? What am I doing? And I really think.
No. I disagree. They're not. They're loving it.
Yeah, maybe. Some are. There are a percentage that really like it. But there's some people in the middle that just I really don't think they understood what's going to happen here. And, it's just kind of a strange place to be in.
Well, you know, the only comment I would make is he's done wonders for my economy, my personal economy. I'm going to save a bunch of money on Christmas presents.
You know,
that's a terrible thing to say, you know.
Oh, it's all right. You know, I think we're going to go through a period of time of you know, these are the first few weeks of an administration, and they feel they have an advantage. Unfortunately, the Democrats lost seats in the House. They lost seats in state capitals all over the country.
Yeah.
They did gain the two seats in Georgia, but that's questionable as well. You know how that process worked, and you know there was a lot of interesting questions that need to be answered about the entire election process, and we really need to look into them for integrity of election. So election processes, so that people actually have confidence and faith in our system, because they don't. You know, half of America right now does not believe that that this was a fair and accurate and well run election. So that has to change. And what I think is going to happen with these first few weeks, the reality of this administration attempting to push a large progressive agenda, they're going to have to clamp down very hard on people's. They're going to have to continue to use law enforcement to intimidate. They're going to have to continue to use the media to spread their voice. But the reality is a lot of people are going to start pushing back. And I think you're beginning to see it now. They didn't expect what's happening here.
No, they didn't. No. Well, what I think is really going to be interesting is Alexandria Ocasio Cortez is now planning on running against Chuck Schumer. That'll be probably pretty interesting, I would think. And
Chuck and Nancy, they got to retire. They're getting old. They got to go. A lot of these old people in the Beltway need to go. Not that I'm thinking AOC is the right one to go up against him, but I'll tell you, it's a good opportunity for a Republican in the state of New York to take the Senate seat back if AOC runs against Schumer. They could split that ticket, and there's a lot of frustration there with what happened with Andrew Cuomo and COVID and the elderly that were forced into retirement homes that died because of the policy that he set forward. There's
If I were to guess, I'd say that Cuomo's probably got a pretty uphill battle he wants to run again for governor. I mean, his policy killed a thousand people.
Yeah, maybe as many as 6,000 to 8,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just, and maybe more. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. And he's been lying and continuing to avoid answers. And then he's intimidating some of his own party members. We've got, you know, people have testified publicly about that. So I just don't see how this can continue. And I really think people in New York, California, hopefully here in Washington State, will start to wake up with some of the stupidity that's out there in progressive politics.
You know, I got to cut your jet. I hate to do that because this one's kind of fun. We used to have a weekly show in Seattle called Stan Morrison, and Stan Morrison ran Our Gang Comedies once a week. We're going to run all our own version of the national Our Gang Comedies. Jimmy,
sounds
always
good.
A pleasure. Hey, welcome back. Time for another very interesting discussion with Stephen Leeb. Stephen is, among other things, an author. He has a couple of newsletters, which I would highly recommend to you folks. We're going to talk right now with Stephen about why he is more bullish on gold, I think, than anybody who I know right now, with the possible exception of my friend Rick Rule. But Rick has got his own reasons for that. Stephen, what are your reasons that you are bullish on gold right now, sir?
I think, Al, that gold is the only industrial metal that is prized for something other than its industrial uses. And that is very important, because what we're going to have to do in order to make this world work, we're going to have to figure out a way of allocating scarce commodities. I mean,
that's
you're
right.
Already seeing silver in the midst of a pandemic at 8 or 9 year highs. You're seeing raw industrials at 8 or 9 year highs. I mean, you've had an incredible run in commodities, and it's just started. And I think the major problem we're going to face is allocating among those commodities, and you cannot do it if a single country is the reserve currency, represents the reserve currency as we have today. You're not going to be able to allocate. It doesn't make any sense to allocate based on how much money you can print and therefore how many commodities you can buy. You're going to have to come together at a certain point, and you're going to have some sort of basket of currencies like the SDR, and you're going to have to, in my opinion, back that basket with gold. And it won't be your mother's gold standard. It will be a gold standard in which gold will be allowed to appreciate as economic activity increases. And it will at least be enough to back all the intercountry trade between, let's say, China and the U.S., the U.S. and other countries. I mean, U.S. and Canada. It will be a basket of currencies. It will probably use some form of blockchain. China is already setting up a digital currency, but it will have to be backed by something that controls how much of that currency is out at any particular point, and it will be used to allocate scarce resources. And as an allocator, its price will continue to rise as economic activity continues to rise. So, yes, I'm extremely bullish on gold in this context, and I can see gold going to numbers I don't even want to say because you will think I'm crazy, but basically, that's my reasoning. Gold is the only conceivable metal that could, you know, perform this role. And, you know, that in a very sort of hopefully fairly coherent nutshell is why I'm so extremely bullish on gold right now.
Well, the concept of a digital currency is very, very important. And I know that China is behind that 1,000%. I had an interview scheduled, which I couldn't do last week, with a fellow over in Israel who is a real expert on the upcoming digital currencies with central banks. We will definitely get him on the show within the next week or so. Stephen, I'm curious about a lot of things. Number one, I don't want to necessarily focus on China, but why are you so sure that gold will, in effect, become, in essence, the reserve currency for all practical purposes in the world?
Well, it will have to back up the reserve currency. We'll have to control how much of the reserve currency is issued. And the reason is, what you need as something to back up a reserve currency is something that is valued for its own sake.
Of course.
And not for industrial uses. I mean, if you were to use, let's say, silver or any combination of commodities other than gold to back up a reserve currency, you'd run into a lot of trouble because you would need that reserve currency to develop the world. So it would be a shrinking amount of whatever it is that's backing it up. There wouldn't be enough. It would eventually, you know, go to maybe, it would be very difficult because you would be continue to need that reserve currency to power and develop the world. Gold is the one exception. Gold is a very special metal in that regard. It's the only one. Again, I know I'm repeating myself, but it's the only one that is valued for its beauty and its luster and its special, you know, qualities that make it so beautiful, yet it doesn't have to be used by industry. And that's the thing. The amount of gold that's on the planet right now is the amount of all the gold that's ever been mined, according to many, is still here on this planet. And you can't say that about any other metal.
No, you can't. There's no question about it. You know, for years and years and years, I really believed that silver was a better investment than gold. And the reason that I did that is because I liked the leverage factor that was involved in silver. But, you know, when you really get serious, when you really want to get about talk about something that truly has intrinsic value in itself, that would have to be what I would call AU gold.
I totally agree. And I'm not disagreeing with you in one bit when you say silver. I mean, I think silver is an extremely exciting metal and has a major role to play in developing the world, photovoltaics, et cetera. But I totally agree with what you're saying. It is gold.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Steve, let me ask you another thing, Mr. Liebsteven. We've only got about 4 minutes left here. We've talked about your book. I want to talk about your newsletters.
Well, my newsletters are basically broad-based. They're dedicated to people who want a broad-based, you know, investment portfolio. And I try very hard to get away from what the financial industry recommends, which is 60% stocks, 40% bonds. There's not a bond in my portfolio. And I'm basically edging much more over toward commodities and toward gold. That's basically been my message over the past, I would guess, 5 to 10 years at least, maybe more. You know, I'm in a situation because most of my newsletter subscribers they're not really believers in metals. I mean, they're believers in the stock market, et cetera, U.S. stocks and, you know, now foreign stocks. But I'm trying to sort of educate them and getting them more into, you know, what we've been talking about, commodities and gold as always necessary to have in your portfolio. And raising the allocations kind of gradually. And I'm trying to do the best I can in, you know, presenting them a portfolio that I think will get them through the next 10, 20 years. And it's a little bit tough because there's a lot of education involved.
I went through that for the 20 years that I was involved, actually 30 years that I was intimately involved with precious metals. I don't want to talk about my history because you're the man of the hour right now, but I just want to say I could not agree with you more, Stephen. Stephen, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'm going to go through your publicist, but I would like to get you on the program, on my portion of the program, every other week. It won't be an hour, but it'll be quite a bit. It'll be a bit less, but I want to get your insights on a regular basis when it comes to the future of the gold market. And the reason I say that right now, you know, is on our homepage, Steve, we've got live gold and live silver on my homepage. I'm seeing gold actually just skyrocket right now. I think I haven't looked at it yet today, but I bet it's still quite a bit north of $1,800 bucks an ounce. Having said that, our site is basically a precious metal site. I got away from that for a while and got into politics, got my head handed to me on a platter. Because it was what's going on in politics. I think it's great for gold, but I think it's terrible for our society.
I just have to interrupt and say,
20 seconds.
I could not agree with you more.
Yeah,
100%.
It's just a joke right now. It's a joke for what's going on right now. What's going on with the COVID virus, the terrible mistake that the governor of New York, Cuomo, made that resulted in just a ton of deaths. I mean, I can't deal with all the bad things that are going on right now, Stephen. But one good thing that has gone on today for me is I've gotten to know you. I'm going to call you tomorrow. We can chat a little bit off mic, and then we're going to set up a time to have you be a regular part of my portion of this program.
I would be really honored because, you know, unlike me, you really had more courage of your convictions back in, you know, the beginning of this century.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.